The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Taxes Show.
People tell me that since I'm the announcer, it's not about me, Todd Wilkerson. They say that my job is to serve the host of the show, Eric Metaxas.
What nonsense. I've known Eric for years, and you can take it from me. You just can't depend on him.
Mark my words, one day you'll blink and he'll be gone.
Off to fleece the next group of suckers.
But I'll always be here, no matter what, right here for you. Put your feet up and tell me all about it. Oh, yeah. And now your host,
if he's even still showing up,
Eric Metaxas.
Thank you, Todd. What a sweetheart. Hey, folks, it's the bunker video version of the Eric Metaxas Show. We're on lockdown. I'm in my personal bunker with my family. The Goebbels family is here, and we all have cyanide pills in case this thing goes south. But basically, we're talking to we've got Chris Himes is here. We have Albin. We have our engineer, James, and...
Yeah,
we have our favorite guest, Dr. John Zmirek. Dr. John, John, we want to talk to you about a lot of things. You've obviously continued to write articles for the stream, stream.org. There are a couple I want to talk to you about. What do you want to talk about first?
Well, first, I'd like to sound really crass and talk about the politics of this. And just I know it seems wrong to be talking about politics when we're worried about Americans' lives. But I would just like to remind people, we didn't cancel elections for the Civil War. You know, the election still took place in 1864, and there was still campaigning, and there was still ordinary political life. We're going to have an election in November. It's going to happen. What are the stakes of that election? The Democrats have just declared themselves to be the party of death by kicking out Dan Lipinski, a terrific pro-life Democrat in Illinois, lost his primary when the Democrat establishment united against him. There is no place for anyone who opposes publicly funded infanticide in the Democrat Party.
So he was the last pro-life Democrat, and he is
in
now
Congress.
Out.
He's now out. Now, the next step, we need to get rid of all the remaining pro-choice Republicans. And then the choice will be beautifully, starkly clear. I give you two paths: choose life or choose death.
This is amazing. So, what are you saying with regard to the election in November? What's the article you wrote at the stream? What's the name of that article?
It's called "Do Americans Wish That Sleepy Joe Biden Were President Right Now?" How comfortable would you be with a man who isn't sure what state or city he's in at any given moment, who trails off ignoring questions into vague, puzzling anecdotes from 30 years ago, who interacts with voters in a haughty, dishonest, insulting way, sometimes crowning those interactions with bizarre challenges to push-up contests or fights out in the parking lot? How about a president who can't remember or is too embarrassed to recite the key phrase from the Declaration of Independence? And who in a time of social distancing is probably going to keep grabbing women and girls and sniffing their hair and their ears? Is that really the guy you would want to be president right now in this pandemic?
Actually,
I don't think so.
What I find funny, and I don't know, you, Chris and Alvin, if you feel like commenting on this, but what I find funny is that as a result of the primary, the Democrats have put themselves in this wildly uncomfortable position of having to unite behind Joe Biden. There's something just magnificently absurd about the idea that they're forced to unite behind someone who is, if not a corpse, a husk. He's barely there. And I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just saying when you look at him, you just think this is not the kind of a guy who inspires confidence. He's probably a nice guy in many ways, but that's not the guy that's going to give you confidence that's going to lead the country.
He wasn't a good politician when he was young and healthy.
He was
unprincipled, slippery, corrupt, glad-handing, backroom dealing, schmoozing, old-style, big-city, crooked Democrat.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Well, I mean, before they all became the party of infanticide, you could deal with people like that.
Right.
But now that he's decided to outflank Bernie Sanders to the left, except on Cuba. On the one issue of Cuba, he's to the right of Bernie Sanders. Otherwise, he has completely joined the Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar squad positions on open borders, zero deportations, zero border enforcement, abortion up through birth. It's staggering how left-wing Joe Biden has become, but then he never had any principles in the first place. If the Democrat Party were what it used to be, which was the party of the Ku Klux Klan, I'm sure Joe Biden would be for that too.
Well, the thing is, Joe Biden is not, he keeps doing things that are so funny and so weird. It's a lot like Trump. Like when Trump came on the scene, he would say something like daisy cutter blast shocking. And then we would just move on, and he would say another daisy cutter blast shocking thing. And it became the new normal that almost every day he would say something that in any previous era would disqualify someone from public life. But he just kept going, it became the new normal. I feel the same way with Biden, that most of the gaffes that he's committed are the kinds of gaffes that would disqualify someone. But
The difference, Eric, Trump said outrageous things, so he violated protocol. Biden is giving serious evidence of brain decay, brain decline.
Well, no. I don't mean to compare them in that sense. All I'm saying is the parallel that I'm drawing is that when something becomes the new normal, in other words, Trump's new normal, I'm mostly in favor of. Biden's new normal, whether he's actually experiencing mental health issues or is not, and I'm not prepared to comment on that, to be perfectly honest. I don't know. But what I have noticed, though, is that he has done things and said things that are so funny and insane that in any previous time, a Democrat, they would be gone. When he asked the guy in the wheelchair to please stand up, when he called the guy that he didn't like fat, he said, hey, fat. Anything like that would disqualify somebody. But it seems like every other day Biden is doing something like that. And I almost want to speculate. I don't know if Chris or Alvin have any ideas, but what he might do in the future. Like, I'm trying to think, what could he do that's weirder than the things that he's already done?
Well, I think any debates with Trump are liable to be catastrophic for Biden. I think political appearances are going to be difficult, and Democrats are going to try to use the virus as an excuse for not having Biden out in public,
right,
sort of hiding him away,
right,
where nobody can see him. But I just don't think this is a time when Americans want a mentally impaired president.
And when would we want a mentally impaired president? Can you think of a time when we would?
Well, when we had budget surpluses in the late 90s. and the Russians had basically collapsed. We could kind of relax.
It sounds like a barking spider. We need to put an end to that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead, Albert.
I just want to jump in. I think
if
going to
take
be
a break, I can give you something about that.
They're going to start using the word classic. That's classic, Joe. Like classic Coke. You know, that's a great thing. Classic.
Right. But what I was going to say to Chris and to Albin wearing his Albin, you look like a Hershey's Kiss. What I was going to say was that I remember when Biden's eye started bleeding in the middle of the debate, and I thought, what could be weirder than this? Like, there are things like that that you wouldn't make it up. It's an SNL skit. And I'm just wondering what's going to happen in the future. Biden's going to do something like that. Like, he'll bite the ear off of Donald Trump, something like that. We're gonna go to a break. We'll be back with John Smirek. Don't go away. Something better inside of me. You brought me into the light. Threw away all those crazy dreams. I put them all behind. And it was you, woman, right down the line. Hey there, folks. Welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show bunker video version. It's so bizarre. We're conducting the whole program from our homes, such as they are, from our bunkers, such as they are. Albin is wearing a hot dog, Nathan's hot dog hat. I don't know why. I guess he just does that at home. His wife likes it. And, you know, we're talking at you, John Smirek, about the stuff you've written at the stream. You wrote an article about racism, and I made a comment. I sent out a weekly email that I sent out this morning about racism and humor and how people are getting very insensitive about Kung Flu and Kung Flu fighting and virus and all this kind of stuff. And your article I thought was interesting. It got a lot of, you know, I put it out on my Facebook page.
Thank you.
Twitter, and it got a lot of interest. So what do you say in that article?
Okay, it's called Verbal Voodoo Can Make Coronavirus, quote, non-racist. Unquote.
I think you have to mute your phone, John.
Okay, is that good now?
Yeah.
Okay, verbal voodoo can make coronavirus non-racist, in quotes.
No, you were still getting an echo. Did you mute your phone? Did you mute your
phone?
How's
that? Is that okay?
That's better. Okay, keep going.
Verbal voodoo can make coronavirus non-racist. And I don't know if people saw the press conference where during a terrible pandemic crisis, these reporters are with the most powerful man in the world. And one of them after another wants to know why he uses the term Chinese virus. Isn't that racist? This is the best thing they can think to ask about. They imply with zero evidence that calling the virus Chinese because it comes from China, the way we've called previous viruses, is going to lead to violence and discrimination against Asian Americans. There is zero evidence of that. I've not heard a single anecdote of Americans being so absurd as to blame Chinese Americans for something that happened in Wuhan as a result of the malfeasance of the communist government that oppresses the brilliant, talented people of China.
And let's just say that most people, you can hear me, John, right?
Yes.
Let's just say that most Americans, most of my wonderful fellow Americans, are far too ignorant to know the difference between a Chinese person, a Korean person, a Japanese person. I mean, the idea that there would be, you know, some backlash against Chinese Americans. But I also want to say that the reporter who questioned, it was a young woman who questioned the president on this issue yesterday, said, made the claim that there have been multiple reports of violence against Chinese Americans. And I thought to myself, What? Like, really? Is that true?
She's lying.
It up? Well, you
she's lying.
Lying. If somebody is lying on national TV and they're talking to the president of the United States and the leader of the free world, that strikes me as actually quite significant.
That right. She knows it's
very, very, very bad.
She's probably reporting some nonsense she saw on Twitter and calling it a report. Okay? No. There are no police reports. There are no police cases. There's no reality behind this. The reality behind this, which the reporters are trying to cover up out of deference to the Chinese communist regime, which, remember, has bullied the NBA into not criticizing its human rights policies, has bullied the Muslim world into not complaining about the concentration camps that the Chinese government puts Muslims into.
Right.
All these institutions are afraid of the Chinese communist government. Our reporters, their media companies might be partly owned by China, or they're afraid they'll never get access to China again. So they're deferring to this totalitarian government the way Hollywood studios deferred to the Nazis in the 1930s and refused to make anti-Nazi films. That's what this is. The fact is, the Chinese government is responsible for this because they bungled the disease. First of all, we're getting one virus after another out of China because of their cruel farming practices and these terrible things called wet markets. When people go to buy meat in China, they go to live markets where all these poor animals are tied up alive next to each other, sharing germs. They take the animal out, they kill it, and the person carries home the fresh killed meat. This apparently is what scientists are pointing to as the origin, not just of this virus, but of SARS and of the last virus before that. This is it's a vector for trans-species crossing of germs and mutation of new germs like the one we're suffering from. That's a Chinese cultural practice that should change because it endangers the world. Beyond that, when this virus started spreading in China, the Chinese communist authorities handled it as badly as the Soviets handled Chernobyl. They did a cover-up. Right. They arrested the doctors who were blowing the whistle. They were secretive. And then the worst thing, because they're a totalitarian government that's sort of insecure because it doesn't trust its people, they don't have transparency. So they let millions of Chinese people travel for Chinese New Year, which is a cultural tradition. But they let them do that with a pandemic, and they spread it all across the country and around the world.
Right.
That's how this went from being a regional problem to a global problem. And it's got the fingerprints, the bloody red fingerprints of the Chinese communist tyrannical government all over it. And good for President Trump for calling them out.
Well, that's my opinion. In other words, yesterday, I got some pushback on social media, people saying that what I was saying was racist. And I thought to myself, wait a second. The Chinese leaders are, in fact, responsible for the deaths of many thousands of people because of the way they treated us. There's nothing to debate about, nothing. That totalitarian dictatorships don't care about life. They don't care about truth. They don't have any values other than power. And so what they did is what has enabled this pandemic to come into the world, to become a pandemic. And so the idea that the president would say that is no big deal. But he didn't just say that. He said it in response to the despicable lie that the Chinese government put out that somehow America and American soldiers were to blame for this, which is a truly despicable lie. All lies are despicable, but this is particularly despicable. And so, you know, he sort of hit back by calling it the Chinese virus. And I just find it interesting that we have people in our press corps that side with the totalitarian Chinese over this and, you know, throw out the racist word. It seems to me strange. But I want to add something up. Go ahead.
It reminds me of when pro-Nazi German Americans called any criticism of Hitler's Germany anti-German bigotry. Imagine if Russian Americans had complained during the 3 years the media was hyping the Russian collusion hoax that it was anti-Slavic racism to talk about Russian collusion, and they were just echoing the anti-Slavic bigotry of the Nazis. People would have laughed at them.
Well, yes, I agree. And The thing that I wanted to ask you about is Dr. McCary, Marty McCary, who was on in the previous hour. He said that the way things are going in China, sorry, in Italy, are a foretaste of what's going to come to this country pretty quickly. And we were trying to say that there are a number of differences between Italy and the United States. What is your view? How did this happen that Italy is at this point so hard hit by this pandemic?
Italy had flooded its factories with Chinese workers, and it was letting them fly back and forth to China to visit their families. That's where this comes from.
That's effectively what I said. Marty was giving us a little pushback on that, but that's the same thing that happened in Iran, is it not?
Yeah. This is globalism, everybody. It gets you cheap sneakers made by Muslim slave laborers, but on the downside, it gives you pandemics.
Hmm. You mentioned that they were just celebrating, of course, the new year over there in China. I guess this is the year of the virus.
Oh, man.
I don't know what Chinese horoscope this year is, the year of the monkey, the year.
Look, I feel terrible for the people. Feel terrible for the people of China who have been under the worst government in the world for 50 or 60 years.
Yeah.
Tens of millions of Chinese were murdered by their government under Mao Zedong. The Chinese people to this day live in a horrible totalitarian state with no religious freedom. Muslim religious prisoners are actually tied down and vivisected so that the Chinese government can steal their vital organs and sell them to wealthy patients who need transplants, and then they die. That was reported in Forbes magazine.
This is the kind of thing that our national media should be talking about. This is about values. This is about the difference between liberty and self-government and, on the other hand, totalitarian dictatorship, where they do things that when you realize it, when you know about it, you realize this is evil. We need to know what freedom is and celebrate it and preserve it. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back with John Zmirak.
There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary.
Hey, folks, welcome back. We're trying something brand new on the program today. We're having guests on. Even though we're all in our various bunkers, John Zmirak is my guest right now. We talked to Dr. Marty McCary earlier. John, tell us about this. What did you call it? The Boomer Challenge?
The Coronavirus Challenge. This 20-something girl on TikTok did a video of herself licking an airplane toilet seat and then giving a peace sign and encouraging her fellow 20-somethings to do this because they are not going to die of the disease. And so what? And there have been reports of thousands of Zoomers and going to spring break and partying and filling bars wherever the bars haven't been closed. The doctors on the news have been warning that young, healthy people are not taking this thing seriously enough, and they're going to end up spreading the disease and killing their grandparents. And in this article at stream.org, I asked the question, how exactly is the generation that welcomed Roe v. Wade, that has been telling people, it's your body, it's your choice. You have absolute bodily autonomy. You can cut up a 9-month baby into pieces, and we're just going to call that choice. How is that generation, which followed its bliss, which lived for the moment, how is it going to convince its grandchildren to spoil their spring break and not go to bars for months and not party with their friends for months in order to preserve the sacred lives of their grandparents who welcomed abortion on demand and aborted a large part of their parents' generation and whose children then aborted this generation?
This is some dark stuff, my friend. What I saw happening down the idea that there are all these young people in Florida having spring break. The most fascinating part is that their parents don't lock them in the basement, that they're allowed to do this, and that the authorities in Florida don't have the wherewithal to send cops down to these beaches and to tell these kids to get out of there. I don't really understand how
we're in a society that is totally hypocritical. We now pretend that gender dysphoria is not a disease or a mental illness. It's just a lifestyle choice. So we send drag queens who are part of the sex industry to do story hours with school children, 6 and 7 years old. That is not that much different from sending coronavirus patients to do a story hour at nursing homes, which I expect them to do next. They're going to say, you can't discriminate against me because I'm coronavirus positive. That's coronaphobia. Give that a couple of weeks. That's going to be the next line.
Maybe I should do a non-drag queen story hour because I've written all these children's books and things, and I can offer that because we're living in such bizarre times. I don't know how long we're going to be doing this program from our bunkers, when we're going to get back into the studio, or if the studio is going to be, you know, used for hospital beds. We don't know what is happening anymore. It's absolutely bizarre. Is today Friday?
Today's Friday.
I mean, I'm losing track of everything. It's so bizarre because we're not going to visit my folks this weekend because they're old. And I thought we don't want to take any chances, you know, just in case. But it's just so bizarre. I'm losing track of all time. John, the article you wrote about racism, can we go back to that? Because I
sure.
just thought it was so fascinating.
Well, yeah, I was talking about how our shattering classes, our dominant cognitive elites, the people who are reporters and media editors and college presidents and making decisions in politics, they had one thing in common. Virtually all of them were liberal arts majors. In other words, BSing was enough to get them B pluses and A minuses at whatever schools they went to. And they never really had to worry that much about numbers and evidence and empirical reality. In fact, they got the idea that if you wield words effectively enough, you can control empirical reality. It's a kind of verbal magic of the kind they practiced in the Middle Ages. They called it logomancy, and people got burned at the stake for it. But the idea is that if you label something as racism, it becomes racism, and you can actually get real people fired and real policies changed and millions of dollars shifted around. When Black Lives Matter made false charges of racism in cities like Baltimore and St. Louis, it had real effects. It raised the crime rate and the murder rate in those cities, and it made police afraid to enforce the law. Using words, weaponizing words, is politically effective, and it changes reality in many ways. The one thing it won't do is change a virus. This virus is real, and using euphemisms about it, using euphemisms about the evil of the Chinese communist government, none of these words are going to work. And it's almost as if God has decided to let us face the fact that words can only do so much. They can't control viruses. They can't give us life. They can't take away death. The only word that can do that is the word that was made flesh and dwelt among us.
I'm not catching that reference. Who are you referring to?
Oh, well, you know the thing. Jesus. Jesus. There you go.
Oh, Confucius?
Jesus of Nazareth. You know what? Was on tip of my tongue. I was having a Biden moment. No, seriously, that's, of course, all true what you just said. I got pushback on social media yesterday. I mentioned it earlier. And somebody called what I was saying racist and demanded that I remove my racist tweet. And if you want to be sure that I'm not going to remove a tweet, demand that I remove it and call it racist. Because if you think that's racist, I'm going to have to school you on what real racism is. It ain't that, folks.
Here's how it's going to work. Now there are going to be people saying, condemning your network for not removing you for refusing to remove a racist tweet. And if people like me defend you, we'll be defenders of racism. This is how the whole verbal magic works.
John, hold on. We're out of time. We're out of time in this segment. We'll be right back. We're back with John Smirak. John Smirak, are you there?
Yes.
How are you? Hey.
I'm good, actually. I'm as peaceful as I can be in these terrible circumstances. I mean, I keep seeing horrendous news reports like 70 priests in Italy are dying of coronavirus. I mean, just appalling, depressing things. I mean, a high percentage of priests around the world are over the age of 60 and even 70. And I'm afraid that if they try to do their job and anoint the sick and hear confessions and say mass for people, they're going to get sick and vanish, and we'll have a world without priests, which as a Catholic is a scary thing.
Well, when we were talking to Dr. Marty McCary earlier, he really made it sound like there's not that much of a difference between what's been happening in Italy, where 450 people died yesterday, I think it was, and what's going to come here. And it didn't seem to make sense to me. And you were saying that, I mean, what I think I already knew and I was alluding to, that there was a tremendous economic relationship between Italy and China. And that is what brought the virus to China.
That's right. The Italians sold their fashion companies to the Chinese, but they wanted the bags to still say made in Italy. So they brought over Chinese cheap labor to work in Italian factories. And then, of course, they let those people go back and forth to visit their families in China. So northern Italy, which is where the fashion industry is, became the vector of disease for the nation of Italy.
It's amazing. And also, Albin or Chris, I can't remember which of you said that they're big smokers in Italy, which of course compromised them further.
Yes, that's true.
Suzanne, my wife, was saying that because of the socialism of medicine in Italy, they're not treating older people. They're basically saying we're not even going to try because we have to reserve our resources for younger people. I don't think that's just a rumor. I think that's a fact of, you know, when you believe in the distribution of capital, you have to make some harsh decisions. So I wonder if some of the deaths are as a result of that as well.
Also, Eric, the solidarity between the generations is one of the things that is broken down as a result of our individualistic culture and the sexual revolution and things like abortion on demand. We no longer feel the same responsibility for the elderly that our parents and grandparents' generation had. Everybody is his own little atom circling the nucleus of the federal government. And I'm afraid that in European countries, especially in Britain, remember how the people who voted for Brexit were generally older than those who voted against it?
Sure.
You saw a lot of ageism and hateful talk about you old, wretched British nationalists who voted for Brexit. Why don't you just die off already? And you saw a lot of that among the elitist Remainer population. I suspect that the leftist government in Italy is happy to see older, more conservative voters vanish from the voting rolls because there won't be a movement against the European Union without those people.
Man, this is dark stuff. John, what is your sense of where we are in this country? In other words, I guess I thought to myself, hey, I haven't shown symptoms. My wife and daughter haven't shown symptoms. I'm guessing we don't have the virus. You know, we've been isolated here for whatever it is, a week or so. And at some point within the next week or so, most people will know whether they have this or don't. That we have to be getting to a point where we will really know who has this and who doesn't. But Marty McCary was suggesting that many more people have it than we think, that it's spread farther than we think, and that we're not even at the stage that the numbers are going to balloon.
I think that's likely true. When I see all these people cavorting on the beach and then going back and visiting their parents or visiting their grandparents, we are not behaving like this is a serious thing. I mean, it's only been a week since really we got the information we needed to take this seriously. I mean, literally, it's been 7 days since what happened in Italy became public and we saw just how grave a crisis this is. And I think President Trump has acted with remarkable speed and flexibility. He's admitted he was wrong at first, like many of us were, about the gravity of this. and he's taking really, you know, powerful steps to try to protect Americans. And I think come November, the shambling remnants of Joe Biden running against a proactive, take charge president like Trump, it's going to be an interesting election.
It is also interesting to me that Trump has never, ever appeared more presidential, in the sense that there has never been anything. I mean, if we want to just look about into self-interest, there has never been anything that has nearly as seriously threatened his presidency and his chances at re-election. I think he realizes that, and that we're seeing a more sober and humbler President Trump than we have seen here before.
That's right. I mean, he's in the at-risk category, you know?
I don't mean about getting.
I know, but I'm saying that's part of it. He took it to home. He took it to heart. He cares about people in his own generation. He cares about his fellow Americans. He's not trying to make cheap political points out of this. He's trying to be president. And I think he's doing a good job. I'm glad George W. Bush or Barack Obama or Bill Clinton are not president right now. They were not serious people. I think actually, for all his humor, Donald Trump is a serious political leader.
Oh, I agree. I think that, part of the way he is, you know, he's a narcissist in the good sense, in a way that, so, you know, there are times when self-interest is a good thing. And I think that him, his understanding the seriousness of this to our economy and to his chances of re-election, it is a good thing. It's made him understand that he's got to be more serious about this. But I think that's authentic. I don't think that's an act. We're at a time, my friend. John, thank you. We'll have you on next week to continue.
Thank you. God bless and stay safe, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, guys.
Final segment of what a show today. My goodness, this has been.
Oh, my goodness.
This is 2 hours of Bunker Video. I wouldn't call it entertainment, but Bunker Video radio show. We had on John Zmirak. We had on Dr. Marty McCary. We've had some fun. We've learned some things together. I hate learning. I don't know about you, but I don't like it.
I have a new word for what we did. Entertainment. No, I think so.
I like that. It's good.
Okay, thank you.
Entertainment.
Yeah.
That's like sedative.
Okay,
Albin, you have a letter you want to read?
I got yet another letter. This is a comment for the, when people write in here. Mark Svendensen from Bloomington, Indiana says, "Hey, Eric and team, during this unusual time in history, I wanted to thank you and the team for the radio show. The Bunker shows have been great. Such a blessing. Yesterday, I got stir crazy, so I took a drive with my dad. As we were listening to the first show segment, I got really excited to learn about history of the 1970s Chinese infection. As I kept listening, I quickly realized this was not going to be a great historical lesson on the dangers of Chinese communism, but a buildup to kung fu fighting. Love it. Thanks for the lighthearted entertainment at this time. It's hard to know all the reasons, but I feel God is anointing even this time. Sincerely, Mark in Bloomington, Indiana."
Thank you, Mark from Bloomington, Indiana. And I do want to say again and again that we must not forget to pray every day that God would use this difficult time to draw us closer to himself and to do things that he could not do otherwise. There's sometimes
I said it before a couple times. What the devil or men intend for evil, God can work to good. It's an extraordinary idea that God can take these difficult things and when we pray, turn them into something beautiful. We don't know what that is, but pray that revival would come out of this. People would turn to their loved ones and especially turn to God. I guess we were talking a moment ago about our song Kung Fu Fighting. And yeah. I just that, you know, we played that whole thing and that was before we realized that humor is now racist.
And right. we have a
joke anymore because who wants to be racist?
By the way, we have a grand prize winner. You have to announce the grand prize winner.
This is the big news. This is the big news. We have a grand prize. Yeah. We're doing a campaign, as you know, with Food for the Poor. Folks, if you have not, please, please go to MetaxasTalk.com, click on the banner, and give anything, something to the folks at Food for the Poor in Guatemala. They're suffering horrific malnutrition. That goes on all the time. Right now, we're going through a season of difficulty in this country. Most of us have plenty of food. Please go to MetaxasTalk.com, and anyone who gives is eligible for the grand prize. And today's or this week's grand prize winner is
Susan Parsons of Jacksonville, Florida.
Parsons of Jacksonville, Florida.
Yes.
Susan, God bless you.
Thank you
for giving. We don't know if you gave $10,000 or $40,000 or $5. We don't care. Anybody who gives, you're entered in a drawing to win. We want to say thank you. Go to MetaxasTalk.com. Don't forget also to order Honor Bound coffee that helps military families. And don't forget to tell all your friends, if you order anything from MyPillow.com, tell them be sure to use the code Eric. That's the only code that gives them our amazing discount. I think for out of time. What a crazy week. We'll catch you on Monday. God bless you.
Happy, safe weekend.